always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
It's tough because the Lakers are basically the only, like, they're put them in a spot where they are expected to give, like, the opposite of a hometown discount. Like, because they have more money to be able to offer, the expectation is you'd better offer that money. And from the Lakers' perspective, they're thinking, no, like, you know, and you know, based on some of the, you know, little things that I've been hearing here and there, like, there is a sense from the Lakers side where they would like to just fully embrace the Luka Doncic era and just, you know, flip that page and see what it looks like if they can turn LeBron's cap slot into two or three, you know, one starter and maybe another couple solid role players, you know, just mathematically. And my retort when I hear that stuff is always like, you realize how good he was though, right? In whatever role that the Lakers needed him to play, you know, by the end of the season, he was in his more kind of traditional role. He was good there. When the Lakers needed him and when JJ Redick approached him and Luka and Austin about how they need the slot in order for the team to make the most sense, LeBron was quite good in that tertiary option role. And also, like, there's a decent shot that he goes within the Lakers' own division. He goes to Golden State and he plays with Steph on a team that is trying to acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo. And now all of a sudden, if that team gets LeBron at the mid-level and also, you know, turns Jimmy Butler's, you know, cap spot into Giannis somehow, some way, well, now all of a sudden you're dealing with that four times within your own division. And you got a LeBron who feels slighted by the front office for not courting him. I don't necessarily want to walk into that next season. That's not something I would be particularly looking forward to. And you know, there's also the Clippers noise. I don't really buy the Clippers noise so much. I don't see him playing for the JV team. But like the Warriors scenario, that makes me nervous enough to where I would say to the Lakers, hey, be careful. Like, just have a little bit of tact here. Like, recognize also, like, the thing that annoyed me, I don't know if you took this the same way, but that parlor game that they were reportedly playing where they were telling people, hey, look at this guy without the LeBron name attached to it. And it's like, how could you try to detach the guy's name who almost single-handedly dug you out of the mud, you know, the last 8 years or however long he's been a Laker, you know? And if I'm LeBron, I'm thinking, why would you detach that from me? I helped you guys out. I was a free agent. I could have gone anywhere. And yet now here at the end, you're kind of treating me like this. And we'll see how all of that lands. The other, you know, big decision that the Lakers have ahead of them here is Austin's number. And that's another one that I think can get somewhat tricky here, in that I thought he did get better over the course of that OKC series. I do think that he started to kind of recognize, okay, I have to operate in the mid-range here and stay under control and not get so far downhill against a defense that's this quick and so good at throwing those counter punches. So I do think next year he would probably be better against that same OKC defense moving forward. But there are still athleticism questions in a backcourt with him and Luka Doncic. There are athleticism questions on a team that, you know, is somewhat cap strapped and options strapped, you know, as far as backline defense. So that makes, you know, Luka and Austin's defensive questions all the louder. How do you see this playing out? I, I'd be shocked if Austin wasn't a Laker next year, but how do you see this playing out here as far as how those negotiations go, what kind of contract we're looking at, all of that good stuff?
I would be shocked too. I said this on my show in the aftermath of the exit interviews, like if you go back and, cause I went back and rewatched it just to finalize my notes before I went live. And it was like, you see when Rob gets asked about LeBron and Austin, he addresses LeBron first. And when he shifts to Austin, he immediately lights
smile.
Up. And, yeah. And then it's talking about there's mutual interest. Like, you know, Austin's talked about how he wants to remain a Laker. And I thought it was a pretty strong endorsement from Rob in terms of wanting to keep Austin. And then you also had the Athletic report come out, ESPN report, both indicated that the Lakers want to keep Austin. Luka wants to keep Austin. Even talking about if there's a potential Giannis trade or a trade for another star, that Luka doesn't want them to put Austin in that type of deal. So I think all of the tea leaves have been pointing or indicating that Austin is going to be back. We've only gotten further confirmation of that after the season. Now, I think the big question is, what is the number? The thing I've been saying, and I think I maybe even said this on here, but, you know, not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago, like technically Austin's number does not impact what the Lakers are going to be doing, because they're going to create the cap space that they're going to create with Austin on that $22 million cap hold. So right. Whether he makes $30 million or he makes the max starting out at $41 million, it's only a matter of how much deeper are the Lakers past the cap. And there will be an impact later, right? Obviously, like how the contract ages, and as we look at future iterations of the Lakers cap sheet, there will of course be an impact based on, is Austin at 30, 33, 36, somewhere in there, versus Austin at 41, 44, 47. So I'm not saying it does not matter, but I do see a lot of misinformation out there of like, well, if they can keep Austin at 30, we can go do this. And it's like, no, that's not how this works. The Lakers are going to,
he's gonna be the keep last Austin at 22, signs.
Go do everything. And then once you figure out the rest of the roster, you come back to Austin, sign whatever contract you're going to sign, and then you go above the cap for that total. And it will be, again, if it's $30 million, that's an $8 million increase over his cap hold, or roughly 8 or 9. If it's 40, that's a $19, $20 million jump. Now, what that number looks like, I think for an older guy, Austin's about to turn 28. So he's like smack dab in his prime. I think he's going to push for a 5-year deal, and that's going to be his preference to get the, I mean, maybe like a 4+1 with a player option in year 5, but some sort of 4+1 or 5 will be his preference to just get maximum amount of years, maximum amount of security. If you're the Lakers, maybe you can leverage that into a little bit of a smaller contract of like, you know, for 4 years, we'll go X amount annually. For 5 years, we want that annual value a little bit lower, but like you're getting the fifth year and extra security. If I had to make a guess, I think it's going to end up in the 5-year, $200 million range. So that is not the max. The most he can make is 5 years, 240. It would be a little bit lower, but I do think the average annual value is going to be somewhere in the high 30s, if not around. So like if I had to like bet on a, I'm betting on a range that like it has to fall into, otherwise I'm gonna disintegrate. I'd say like 5 years 180 to 5 years 200, but I would err probably a little bit closer to the 200 mark. So he's taking $40 million less than his max. That ends up being like about $40 million annually over the lifetime of the deal. But really, it's probably starting low 30s. And then progressing by like around $3 million each year. So that would be my bet right now. But what do you think? What do you think that number ends up?
Yeah, I would say it's in that 35 to 40 range. I would actually like to see if they could have that contract descend. You know, like if you're Austin and you're getting the same amount of money regardless, could you, if you're Rob, could you see if
you can do like 41, 39, 37, 35, 33, something like that, and have it right. Progressively descend?
I would like to see if you could maybe do that. It makes it easier, like a lot easier to trade guys if that is where this eventually winds up, right? Because unfortunately, you know, and I should have mentioned this at the top when we were talking about whether or not this season was a success. one reason that I could maybe point to it maybe not being a success is because we didn't find out anything as far as the Luka Austin combination in the postseason. We still don't know. And, you know, and that was probably the most important question that they needed to answer this year. So, and obviously it we didn't get that answer because of circumstances and because of just shit luck. But at the end of the day, that is a question that went unanswered, and you're going to be signing him to this contract, and you're going to be committing to the Luka Austin backcourt for the, you know, to the tune of almost $100 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years. And you're doing so blind. And that makes me nervous about that. I think maybe a little bit more confidence in that backcourt than most, depending on the team that's built around them. But at, you know, in the end, at the end of the day, I think it does matter the kind of contract, meaning the structure of the contract that Austin signs here, because if it doesn't work out, you're going to lose a little bit of leverage in those trade negotiations. And if you sign like a contract that descends a little bit, that wins you back some of the leverage that you would lose by trading after you find out that maybe that pair doesn't work long term. The other thing here that I wanted to ask you about, you know, there's been kind of a debate externally and internally as far as the Lakers' priority here in upgrading around Luka and around Austin. And I'm of the mindset that the center spot is their most important spot that they need to upgrade at, that they need an elite presence at. Unfortunately, the market isn't going to allow them, I don't think, to land that player, you know, in short order. But I think that's my, like, I've always thought maybe wings for a long time, but I've kind of completely landed on centers being most important. If you had the choice here, you know, and let's say it was a similar caliber player, one was a wing, what was a center that you could pursue, where would you start in building a roster around Luka and Austin?
It's really tough because I go back and forth. I think the honest answer is both. If I have to pick, I kind of lean wing still, because I think it's easier to find bargain bin centers. I think any two-way wing of a certain caliber is going to be making 25 plus million if they're not on the rookie scale contract. And the Lakers have not been drafting those guys, which I think is its own issue with, like, if you look at who they've drafted recently, it has been a lot of scoring guards when that's been an area that they have, like, kind of needed off the bench, you can find, like, Malik Beasley goes for a minimum contract a couple years ago, or Gary Trent Jr., or like whatever, like there are guys out there that you can find in that mold. It's really difficult to find these two-way wings that I think the smartest teams in the league just continue to pluck in the mid to late first round or early second round. So that to me has been an area the Lakers have not been able to address for years. And I think it's an area that I just think if like it's harder, like you can go bargain bin hunting and find like even a Kata, right? Who or an Ayton, either one of those guys, like, were they up to the level that you needed from a center position to win a championship? Like, no, but you could be a really good team with either one of those guys. I think it's a little bit trickier to have a placeholder wing that isn't of a certain level. And again, I think once you get to a certain percentile on both sides of the ball, you're just going to be priced out. So I would say if the Lakers can acquire a two-way wing, a true two-way wing, like we're talking a guy who at a minimum is like an above league average 3-point shooter and or is like a, you know, more in the Peyton Watson mold where he could do a lot more in terms of shot creation and you know, scoring off the dribble. Yeah. Like that is like the bare minimum on offense. And then defensively, they've got to be ideally like an all defense caliber guy who can defend multiple positions. And if it were up to me, someone in the 6'7" to 6'9" range, I think it's got to be someone with some size and physically imposing. So those guys are tough to find. Those guys are not readily available. If they are available, they're often for asking for at least two first round picks for that type of guy, even if it's like a role player. Like if you're trying to get a Tamani Kamara, it's going to cost you at least two first round picks. And also if I'm Portland, I'm like, why am I even trading him? Doesn't really make any sense. So I would say though, the answer is both. Now, if you look at the two avenues to acquiring these players, I think the center is more likely in free agency and the wing is more likely on the trade market. I don't really see a wing outside, like Watson and Eason, but they're both restricted free agents. And like Eason, I'm still not sure how I feel about him. I would probably prefer him as a bench player than a starter. And then the center market though, like you have Kessler and Durin, also both RFAs, but like that, you know, they're at a certain level. Maybe you get a discount with like a Mitchell Robinson or a Robert Williams. But I think the center market is going to be stronger in free agency and the wing market's going to be stronger in trades. But between the two, I still think the answer is both. I think ideally they go into next year with two new starters around Luka, LeBron and Austin. And if you have like those, you know, those two new guys plus those three and like Rui and Marcus as your top seven, I think that's a really strong top seven.
Yeah. And then like, you know, I think they're expecting big things from Thero next year. Maybe Bronny takes another step forward next year. And then we'll see what they do with 25. We have a super comment and then we will get you out of here. But before we get to that super comment, we have to play the most important sound on the show. All right. The question here comes from the Wannabe GMs podcast who asks or who writes ideal / realistic offseason. Luka leaves. Oh, no. I was Luka Reeves, Bron.
It's like that's not an ideal offseason.
That's like, whoa, hold on. Luka Reeves, Bron, Kuminga Turner, Smart using the room exception, Gary Trent Jr. using him on the minimum, Matisse Thybulle for $6 million, Rui making $20 million a year on a four-year I don't think they would sign him to a four-year contract, and then Hayes with a slight pay raise, and this wannabe GM saved both late first rounders. Would that be your ideal offseason outcome?
We've, I think... Wannabe GM's podcast floated a similar trade to me or was pushing for Turner. And at first I was out on Turner. Then I became a little bit more open to it, but I think it would be dependent on LA either getting a first from Milwaukee or dumping Vando in the deal. So then Vando's got two more years left at around $24 million. Turner's got three more years left at like almost, I mean, it's a lot. It's like almost over 75. It's like $80 million for over the next 3 years. So the logic would be you're dumping Vando. You don't have to attach a first to dump Vando. Like that's like the one way. I think there's like two ways to dump Vando. You either attach a first or you take like on a worse contract. Turner's got an extra year and he's making double the amount of you know, more than double the amount of Vando over each of the next 2 years, then plus the third year. I'm not a big Kuminga guy. I don't think he's a starter on a championship team right now. I think he could be a rotation guy, but, so I would still say I don't think you are good enough or good enough rebounding with this group. I think it's also a smaller group from like I wouldn't say they're like physically imposing. There's not a lot of strength or power within the overall rotation, in my opinion. But you are more athletic and you know, Thybulle would help off the bench. Gary Trent Jr. would come in and be that type of shooter and guy who could get hot. But I just don't view Kuminga as that. I guess in this build, Kuminga is your two-way wing, and I just don't view him at that level, especially for a group. Like I just, you know, Kuminga Turner to me doesn't really get me excited.
Did you, would you be higher or lower on Miles Turner if you found out that he was telling you about things that were going on within the locker room and organizationally last year?
I mean, personally, I'd be higher, but
it is better for us. That is true. Here's a clip. I just saw it's making the rounds right now on like, as you and I have been talking, Here's Turner talking about his experience as a Milwaukee Buck last year.
And for all types of stuff now, you guys can find a lot.
It depends on the coach. So Doc Rivers, he didn't find anybody. Guys were late all the time. Guys were, you know, showing up to film whenever they wanted to show up. Guys were missing meetings. Like, it was one of the craziest things I personally ever experienced. We literally, if the plane took off at 2 o'clock, we weren't leaving until 4:30. I'm being so serious, bro. It was crazy, dog. Guys were an hour late to the plane. It got to the point where I knew not to show up until like an hour after they said the plane was taken off. It was crazy.
So who's the teammate that's most likely to be late? Well, all of yours, obviously, because nobody gets fined.
Giannis is going to show up whenever he wants, really. You know, I think that this kind of just came with the territory at that. And once I kind of saw what was going down, I was like, hey, man, more power to you. They ain't going to fine you. Do what you do.
Right.
Except when we're going to Dallas. That's when I was like, all right, come on.
Right now we're getting fined for missed free throw box outs.
Honestly, that's a good one. I'm not mad at that. I'm actually not mad at that at all.
Well, we're a little bit mad about it. Because it's like, all right, well, what if the ball goes out of bounds? There's no possession. What if, like, there's always caveats to it. Yeah, bad bounce.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think that was like Miles Turner soft launching a trade request.
It's certainly probably like if the Lakers are interested in Giannis, I don't think you can acquire Miles Turner. Like, he's just straight saying, yeah, that dude's not a professional. It was funny while he was talking, I was kind of like, well, I kind of like that he took offense to people not being very professional. But same time, if I'm in his locker room, I'm probably
that's
not
something you got to keep internally. You can't be. I think that's something you can maybe. You can maybe share if you left the if he had been traded and he was doing his first like post trade podcast, even then it's not like the best look, but you can talk about something like that. But to still be on the team with Giannis, like they're going to have a new head. I mean, they have a new head coach in Taylor Jenkins, but that's pretty interesting.
I don't think he's going to be on the team after that. And then we got one last question here before we have to get you out of here. Bailo Amisi is your starting center. Saves you money. That's something that the Lakers have done the last few years where they try to like buy low or gamble on the center spot. And I just don't think you can do that. Like, especially not in the West. You're going up against Wemby. You're going up against Jokic. You're going up against that huge Minnesota front line. You're going up against OKC's I Hart and Chet combo. I just don't think you can, like, you know, Ayton was like really good value all year. Ayton was like one of the better case scenarios that the Lakers could have gotten from him. And by the end of the series, it was like JJ Redick is literally saying, I can't play that guy. And, I'm kind of done with that approach to the center spot, but I would like to buy low on Misi as like Jackson's replacement. I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah, I like Misi. I don't know if he could be a starter on a contender. I think that's still, I mean, he's still pretty young, so it's open-ended. But I would say to bring it back to like the whole center versus wing conversation, I think you can do, I know Pete has been big on this, of like maybe do some sort of makeshift like three-headed center rotation that do you bring in Robert Williams, you know, if DA opts in and you just only have so many salaries you can dump. And like, that's actually one of the ones that, at least on like a production standpoint, you can justify the $8 million for DA compared to the 12 plus for Vando or like the 4 plus for Dalton or whatever. Like, there's probably other contracts you'd rather dump. So maybe it is, do we get some sort of, like, we use part of the room exception on Robert Williams, and then you have Williams, DA, and Jackson. It's like not obviously the best center rotation, but you have three guys who can kind of fit different needs. And then the wing spot is where you heavily invest in. Cause I think the inverse is like, well, if you get the Durin or the Kessler or whoever, now you're talking about kind of running it back with the same group that eventually they defended at a certain level late in the season or you know, during that 16-2 stretch and then in the playoffs. But for being honest, like, I mean, they ranked 20th in defensive rating on the season. They were a bottom 10 defense for most of the season. I think if we're looking at their top eight players, they have maybe like one consistent above average defender in their rotation. They need to change that. And the center spot is a part of that, but I also just think in general they need more two-way wings and guys who can defend multiple positions and I think just take their defense to a different level. So I guess if you have to like piece it together at one spot, the center spot could be that position, but you have to like really nail it and I think have better players than you had this season. But I think the wing, it's still a little bit tricky unless you just nail, like you nail the 25th pick and you get some, you know, sleeper who's like immediately ready to contribute, barring something like that. I think you probably have to invest more on the perimeter.
Yeah. And even then, like if somebody slides as far down to 25 as like say Dalton did to, you know, 14 or whatever the Lakers drafted at that year, like that makes me nervous. And I was like, wait, why'd he slide? I need to know. can that person read a playbook? Jovan, I've taken up too much of your time. Thank you very much for hopping on. As always, check out Jovan's work on Buha's Block and on the Lakers Collective, as well as the Great Western Forum pods that he and Pete and I record. We'll have one of those coming up relatively soon as well to do an autopsy on the previous season and start to look ahead to the off season as well. Anything else? Did I just see you say that you're going to go live for the Drake album drop?
We'll see. We'll see where I'm at later in the day, if I'm capable of talking in a few hours. But yeah, I'm tentatively planning to go live.
I said this to you in the chat, in your and my and Pete's group chat, that I don't think I've ever listened to a Drake song from like start to finish. And that's the only text you have ever, like, you know, the respond thing that you could. You disliked the text. I didn't realize you were that big of a Drake fan. I had no idea.
I got some Drake stuff behind me. I'm a pretty big Drake fan.
You and Raj.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is going to do it, though. And that's going to do it for this week's episodes here on The Lounge. I'm going to take a page out of Jovan's book and take tomorrow off while I probably am going to do some radio hits as well. But tomorrow, no show tomorrow. And then Sunday, we're doing this. I don't need to talk too much about it into detail or whatever. But the scheduling the show for Monday morning might get a little tricky. So I might either release Monday show in podcast form on Sunday, or you'll get it later Monday afternoon. But regardless, I'll let you guys know how that's playing out whenever it's playing out. Thank you very much for Jovan, to Jovan for hopping on. Have a great rest of your week. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys on Sunday.
Bye, everyone.